Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical, underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at ZonePouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone with Zone Nicotine Pouches. Napa!
Silence is golden, especially when it comes to brakes. That's why Napa Silent Guard are built to be one of the smoothest and most quiet brakes on the market. Made with fiber-reinforced shims that eliminate noise for the life of the pad, rubber-coated hardware for a better fit, and quality design that meets and exceeds OE performance. Silent Guard brakes deliver the stopping power drivers demand. Available now at Napa locations nationwide. Napa!
The following is a production of the Motor Racing Network, the voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network presents NASCAR Live Wide Open.
Off the end of the back straightaway, Larson's going to send it. Larson's in the wall. Larson's on Hamlin's back bumper. Logano leads down the back straightaway. Keselowski's in line. Now he turns him. Both Team Penske cars crash. Keselowski is up in a ball of flame.
NASCAR Live Wide Open is brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. Now, here is your host, Mike Bagley.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another installment of NASCAR Live Wide Open here on the Motor Racing Network. Mike Bagley and the entire MRN crew here with you. After spending a very eventful weekend at Talladega Super Speedway, Tyler Reddick winning on Sunday, Jesse Love and Jake Finch winning on Saturday. And just like that, we're off to Dover Motor Speedway this weekend. So over the weekend in Talladega, lots of things took place. One of those was pretty cool in that Mark Martin made his way back to the racetrack. NASCAR Hall of Famer, obviously one of NASCAR's 75 greatest drivers. Well, Mark was there, did a lap around the garage, stopped in, and actually stuck his head into the MRN studio, sat down, and, well, I whipped out the old microphone and had time to spend with the native of Batesville, Arkansas, and it was a great time catching up with Mark Martin, who threw the green flag for the Geico 500.
Well, Mark, appreciate you making time for us.
What in the world is Mark Martin up to these days?
I've been fanning it up just like all the fans, watching a lot of racing since it got, you know, going here after the first of the year. Watch all the NASCAR races, but I also watch a lot of late model dirt racing as well. And, you know, just been pretty quiet. I live a pretty quiet life. It's exciting to be here at Talladega. And really fun to see the fans. Probably miss that more than anything. So I'm having a blast.
When you talk about you watch races, now I won't talk about Cup just yet, but like when you watch a late model dirt race, you know, obviously you're looking through the lens of a NASCAR Hall of Famer, multiple race winner. What do you look for? What catches your attention when you watch these races?
Oh, I, you know, the guy who, when the groove is on the bottom, it starts out in the middle on the dirt track usually, and then the guys migrate to the bottom after the middle gets slick, and the guys that can make it really happen around the top on the cushion. And it gets real knife edge up there a lot of times, and sometimes the quarter panels do a little Darlington walling and stuff like that. And, you know, I watch for the guys that can move around, either go to the top or the bottom when the middle is seems like it's the place and they find more speed. So that's really the attraction. My best friend Lance Landers owns Jonathan Davenport's car. So, you know, Jonathan's one of the best in the nation on the late model dirt series. And so I love watching him race and, you know, all the late model dirt racing that's on, you know, streaming.
When you watch Cup races or Xfinity or truck races, what do you make about what you see now? Because what you see now is totally different from the way it was when you drove.
You know, different things. I have different emotions. Sometimes I, you know, I love it, and you know, I for example, I'll tell you the odd thing. You know, I'm not a fan at all of what they did to Atlanta, to the racetrack. However, you know, you got to finish like you had there last time we had there. I mean, what can you say? That was incredible. So it's kind of weird. It's a plus and a minus, or a minus and a plus on the Atlanta thing. The Bristol race, in my opinion, is the best race that I've seen in years, and that's because it looked like a race from the old days. I'm talking about real old days. And it was cool to see people go and come, and it was I appreciated Denny Hamlin's amazing ability to there. You know, we have not witnessed anyone that can save rear tires like Denny Hamlin in my era. I don't recall anybody. I'm sure Pearson was real special with what he did, and maybe Petty as well. I don't know, but we haven't seen anybody with that kind of, you know, that's why he, Denny excels at Martinsville and Richmond, because he's so amazing. And it showed again at Bristol with the tires wearing out. So, look, we are witnessing greatness today, and a lot of people don't realize that. But we've got heroes on the racetrack. We're seeing a once in a generation driver, in my opinion, in Kyle Larson, on the level of AJ Foyt or Mario Andretti. He is a once in a generation, and we need to appreciate the opportunity to get to watch him race. And you know, we've got great races, race car drivers. I wouldn't take anything away from Tyler Reddick as well. These guys are, you know, Christopher Bell, I don't think, has reached his full potential yet. I think he's unbelievable. But these guys, we're seeing greatness on the racetrack, and we don't realize it.
You talked about Kyle Larson. The thing that amazes me about Kyle is he has the uncanny ability to drive with the seat of his pants. He drives. He will put that backside in that car, and he can get a feel. Did you do that when you drove? Like, where in your body did you need to feel the race car to then give it the appropriate input that it needed?
100% feel. 100% seat of my pants and in my hands. But I wasn't on Kyle Larson's level, I'm going to tell you. You know, Kyle Larson, I know what beast a late model dirt car is. And he raced against the best of the best in his first race he won. Nobody does that. The only person I ever knew did that was AJ Foyt or Mario Andretti. Nobody does that. And he wins in wing sprint cars. Yeah, I mean, dude, I think Tony Stewart's one of the greatest race car drivers of all time. And I didn't see him winning a bunch of wing sprint car races, dude. I'm telling you, Tony Stewart is the man. But anyway, you know, I'm not going to let's move on from Kyle Larson. I appreciate the opportunity to get to see him drive.
And I think we all do, because it is something special. We're obviously looking forward to what he's going to do at the Indianapolis 500. There is no reason to believe. I saw him test a couple weeks ago, and it was amazing. I mean, he is making moves like Johnny Rutherford, you know, Rick Mears, AJ Foyt, you name them. And that was day one of a rookie test. And that's amazing. You drop him into anything, and that kid responds.
Yeah, the Indy thing blew me away, too, just like the late model dirt thing. And I hope that it continues. Now, let's not forget that Kurt Busch blew us away too. He went up there and ran in the top five the whole time, qualifying in the race. I think he finished sixth, but he ran in the top five a bunch. So Kurt Busch, you know, was a really special talent as well. But gosh, man, I'm hoping that Kyle Larson can really, really shake things up there and do like he did in that practice. It was amazing. So, yeah, Indy's going to be exciting.
You mentioned Bristol, and obviously we had a lot of corded time, that stuff. And the newer NASCAR fan is appalled that that happened, but that was commonplace back in the day. I maintain that if we went back there next weekend, knowing what we know now, we'd have a totally different race, and we wouldn't be courting as many tires because the teams would be better prepared. But that's nothing new. What's it like trying to manage your equipment, especially the tires that are underneath you?
Well, yeah, today's fan hadn't seen racers have to manage anything on their car. They don't have to manage brakes anymore. They don't have to manage transmissions or engines or anything. You know, they can go run hard, even at Martinsville, from the green flag. Man, you had to manage every piece of it was on your car. And a lot of times, or some of the times, it was tires. I mean, and the guys that managed them best or didn't blow them out or didn't wear them out or whatever, or, you know, saved the best for last were the guys that came out on top. So, yeah, they would do better if they had it again. But that's what makes racing. If you take 30 cars all within 2/10 of a second of each other and you put them on a racetrack that's not so big that we create this draft hole in the air package so that you get a little bit of movement, you're not going to have much. I'm sorry. You know, everybody's car being the same is not great. It might have been great in IROC when there was 12 cars and some of the guys weren't used to driving those tracks or those cars, and then you only had 6 that were really going for it. That was okay. But every driver on the racetrack knows what the hell they're doing now. And everybody's got a dang good car. And so if the best guy out there, if he gets stuck back there in 30th, it's a chore to get back to the top 10, much less drive to the lead. I remember when Earnhardt would have a bad pit stop, come out, go in leading, come out in 20th or... And in 10 laps, he'd be leading again. The fans would go crazy, lose their mind, go crazy. You need some movement in these races. And so that's what we got with Bristol, was movement. You got a guy who wanted to step on the gas. He'd drive up there and lead, but he wouldn't stay there long. Then somebody else would step on the gas a little bit. And I thought it made for a great race. I don't think you want every race to be that way, but it was an incredible race. And racing is different. You'll have one that is not very exciting. Let's say Atlanta. The last Atlanta race, you know, where we had 3 wide finish, was incredible. You could go back there next time and have the most boring race ever under the same rules package. Not every race is going to be the best one you ever saw. That's the way it always was, and it always has been.
One of the things that I always remember about you is when you drove, especially in the Busch races back in the day, you did it in the Cup race, you did it in every race. There'd be a time where you'd be leading, you'd be running in the top 5. On a certain racetrack, and all of a sudden you would pull to the inside and they or he would go on by you, and then you would continue on. At one point, I thought I was calling one of your races one day, I thought you had a problem. But that is when you started to manage races in a different way from everybody else. Describe what it was that you were doing and your intent of what you were doing when you did it.
It really started back, you know, when I owned my own race team and I was a late teen, early 20s, without a dollar sponsor. Look, I got all the equipment free. I had great deals, but I didn't have any. I raced off the purse. Man, the pay window was everything. And so I learned, and I was running 200, 300, and 400 lap races. So I learned, you know, right then to manage my stuff and maximize the finish. Don't worry about impressing anybody until, you know, it was time for the pay window to open. And, you know, I came into Cup racing, and you still had to manage tires or equipment or whatever. You also needed to not get in a wreck. You know, Trickle taught me, way back, in order to finish first you must finish. So I had all that stuff in mind. I was racing. I wanted to win a championship. I was racing for a championship. So if a guy was faster than you, if you tried to hold him up and he wasn't kind to you, you could get wrecked. If you let him go, he would probably wreck with someone else. and you wouldn't even have to pass him back. You know, it just was common sense to me. The pay window is what counted. That's where the points were. And I spent my races in the early 90s, late 80s and early 90s. I spent the whole race maximizing after the last pit stop. And I felt like I raced as aggressive as anyone else ever from then on, you know, from that point on. Minus running over anybody. I didn't get run over on a racetrack because I gave people respect, and I wasn't going to run over anybody or take anything away or rob anybody. So I didn't do that, but I raced aggressive as hell. If you ever saw any of the in-car camera stuff, you could see how hard I'd be driving later on in the race and late in the race, and was fierce, you know, in that respect. But man, if it was first quarter of the race and somebody wanted to go, have at it, pal.
I think in this day and age, everybody equates a good racing or a good race or good racing with cars close together, side by side, every single lap, swapping spots. But it was you and it was Tony, especially Tony at Indianapolis, when I think a question got brought up about passing. And Tony says, listen, if you want to see passing, we'll take you out on 465. We'll set up a couple lawn chairs. We'll watch passing all day out there. Passing doesn't equate to racing. I think that racers like you and Tony, a race to you is, all right, I'm 8/10 behind. Let me try to get that to 7/10, get it to 6, get it to 5, and manage that. Is that in your mind what a good race is when you put two guys head to head, the stopwatches involved, and you can chip away?
Yeah, and that's exciting. It's exciting for me to watch someone come, you know, even, wasn't it last week where we were watching where, gosh, I don't even remember who it was chasing down the leader, but he chased down the leader, you know, got almost there. He was coming, you know, a tenth or two a lap, and it was like, dude, this is racing. I mean, that was exciting to me. I'm not opposed to side-by-side racing. I like that three-wide finish at Atlanta, and I'm not a fan of the Atlanta racetrack anymore, but I was a fan of that finish. But I don't want them all to be that way. I want to see guys, you know, chipping away, figuring out a way, looking for a different line, you know, looking higher, looking low, figuring something out, and being able to come on with a burst, you know, and run the leader down, or even in the pack. You know, I really enjoy that too. The one thing I would like to see more of is I'd like to see more of a spotlight from the middle of the pack back, because there's some great race car drivers and some great races back there. And I'm an underdog fan, and I like what I see. I see sometimes with Anthony Alfredo, for example, or, you know, even, Justin Haley seems to overperform. It really does seem in Rick Ware Racing like he's overperformed. I like seeing that. I like that as much as I see the front race as well. And so I'd like to see more of that going in the future.
I know we got to let you go because you got to get up in the flag stand. Appreciate you making time for us. We love it when you're able to get to the racetrack. We miss seeing you here. You haven't been forgotten. The fans still ask about you. And I know they'll enjoy the time we spent here. And don't be a stranger, my friend. You're always welcome.
I love it. I'm having a ball. And everybody out there, check out MarkMartinArchive.com. My son Matthew's doing some amazing work with that.
What a storied career for Mark Martin. 882 starts, 40 wins, 271 top fives, 453 top tens, 56 poles in 882 starts in the NASCAR Cup Series. 31 years worth of cup racing, and Mark Martin's last cup race that he raced was actually the season finale in 2013. It's been a little over 10 years since Mark Martin has been behind the wheel of a race car. Always a pleasure catching up with Mark. Let's shift gears. Let's talk Dover, and let's see what the odds are saying for this week's Worth 400 for the Cup cars. Producer Trey is here with the odds breakdown for the racing festivities at the Monster Mile. Trey?
Well, Mike, after he was a little bit further down the board in terms of odds for Talladega, the driver back at the top of the board as the favorite this weekend is Kyle Larson. Larson is plus 450 to win this weekend at Dover. Right behind him, you've got Martin Truex Jr. as plus 650. They think he might go back-to-back at the Monster Mile. In terms of the drivers who are right below that, you've got a trifecta of drivers at plus 750, and that is going to be where my pick is coming from. You've got Denny Hamlin, William Byron, and Ross Chastain all at plus 750, and I'm going with Ross. If you look at the two Dover races that have happened in this next-gen race car, Ross has a second-place finish last year and a third-place finish in 2022. He's led nearly 100 laps in both races. Last year, one of his wins was at the Nashville Super Speedway on a concrete surface, similar to what we see at Dover. Ross, plus 750. I think he closes the deal and gets his first Dover win this weekend. In terms of long shots, I think there are a couple kind of all across the board that you could look for. If you're looking for one that's not super steep, probably the most likely one to cash, we know Hendrick Motorsports history at Dover. Alex Bowman sits at 16-1. I think Bowman could be live to complete the Hendrick team as far as all four of them getting wins this season. He's 16-1. Josh Berry ran very well there at Dover last year, filling in for Alex Bowman. He is at 55-1. He could be live this weekend. And then in the first next-gen race at Dover, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., finished second. Stenhouse is down at 100-1. All of those could be in play if we have a little bit of a dicey weekend at Dover and some chaos ensues. But ultimately, I think it's Ross Chastain getting his first win of the season and his first win at Dover.
I'm liking that pick. And that one team's been hovering, almost like Tyler Reddick and his team have been hovering. And they were able to go to victory lane last weekend at Talladega. I like the pick. Ross Chastain for the win. The Worth 400. Our friends at the Performance Racing Network will have that call both Saturday and Sunday. We will have the call the following week at Kansas Speedway. We'll talk more about Kansas next week when we get you set up for what will be one of two trips into the Kansas Speedway. Don't forget, Tuesday night, we got you covered with NASCAR Live, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We're back here next Thursday with another download of NASCAR Live Wide Open, and then off into the racing weekend at Kansas Speedway. For producer Trey and the rest of the MRN crew, I'm Mike Bagley. Thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy your Dover racing weekend, and we'll chat with you next week right here again on the Motor Racing Network. Until then, so long, everybody.
Hey, everyone, it's Kyle Busch. At Cheddar's, you get a variety of American classics in a place that feels like home. They have comfort food like hand-breaded chicken tenders, homemade chicken pot pie with nearly a half a pound of roasted chicken under that golden flaky crust, slow-smoked baby back ribs so big they're falling off the plate, all for unbeatable prices. And the best part? A free honey butter croissant for every guest. Now that's how they do it. Cheddar's. Get a lot for not a lot.
Whelan Engineering, a global leader in the emergency warning industry, designs and manufactures reliable and powerful warning lights, white illumination lighting, sirens, controllers, and warning systems for the automotive, aviation, and mass notification industries worldwide. Whelan products are designed, sourced, and manufactured in America and tested on site to meet the toughest industry standards. Whelan Engineering, manufactured in America for over 70 years. We never left, and we're here to stay.